Jamie Lee Grace. Welcome to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio. This is a fascinating topic for those of us who have quit the booze, or even if you're thinking about it. My guest is Anna Wolf, who has the fabulously titled podcast, How to Get Wet When You're Dry. Oh, this is going to be an interesting chat. Welcome, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us.
No what pressure.
What a fantastic title. Come on, that's just perfect, isn't it?
Thanks.
You better tell us what you mean. I can't possibly begin to imagine what it is you're talking about. But it's a thing, isn't it? It's such a thing. And when, on an absolutely serious note, when we quit the booze, for some people, and some are my ripe old age, we can honestly look back and go, oh my God, I've actually never had sex sober.
Oh,
what
yeah.
A scary thing. How scary is that when you actually think about it?
Do you know what's so funny is I didn't think about it until I was in the situation where I was sober and I was seeing somebody and I was stood there. And it felt like, oh yeah, it felt like I was at a school disco on stage in front of everybody and I didn't know how to dance.
Wow. Tell us a bit about your background. Tell us how you got to this point. What happened for you?
Sure. So I have been sober for 4 years, a couple of weeks ago. So time has flown by. I always say that sobriety is like dog years. It feels like I've just had so many lifetimes in the last few years, but essentially, so I came into sobriety because my life reached a real rock bottom with the drinking, but it also coincided with a severe eating disorder. And I didn't know that it was very common for those two things to coexist. Yeah. And so, you know, my relationship with myself and my body was skewed and really sad for up until I was 27 when I decided, oh my goodness, I need help. And I say decided, I feel like it was decided more me because it was just so painful that I thought, okay, I'm just going to give something one last try. Yeah. And then so fast forward to now, I don't know, with the podcast, I thought that life was going to be unbelievably boring when I stopped drinking. I also had no idea who I was. And I feel like there can be in the wellness world and stuff, this sort of rhetoric of like, you have to be peak perfection and on this sort of just like striving for being this like wonderful person now that you've put the drink down all the time. And that just simply isn't it. It's constant exploration. And the only reason I'm sober is because I had friends who are also sober who said everything. They shared everything that they had been through, whether it was like humiliating and saying that they threw up on their ex's sweater and mailed it to him when they were drunk, or whether it was just saying that they were emotionally struggling. And I just wanted to create something that brought in all of these layers to people and just that it can be fun.
Yeah. But what actually happened for you then? You say you actually hit a rock bottom. How did you get free?
So how did I get free? Big question. I got very lucky in the sense I called my dad, and I love my dad with all of my heart, but he's a German man, so has the emotional intelligence of a flip-flop. But his wife is a therapist, and she heard me on the end of the phone and just thought, your daughter really needs help. And the thing is, I didn't think I had a drinking problem. I was so focused on my eating disorder and thought that's what the root of my pain was, in the same way I thought eventually the drinking was the root of my pain, that I went to rehab, and I want to stress that you don't need rehab, and that nowadays, because of NHS funding and stuff, it can be a real privilege to get to go. But I was in rehab for 3 months, and the entire time I was there, I did not mention my drinking because I was in denial. But ultimately, I had issues with binge eating and anorexia and bulimia for 10 years. I went from obese to underweight within 1 year.
Wow.
And my drinking really coincided with that. It was just very cyclical. It's like I felt awful about my body. I would drink, then I would binge eat while I was drinking, then I'd starve myself. And it was just this horrible cycle until I reached a point of, I'm going to kill myself. If something doesn't happen right now, I'm going to kill myself. Life just didn't have color anymore or choice. I never forget that feeling when I talk about it. It was just awful. And I didn't know that there was another side.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it just feels as though that's who you are.
Yeah.
What was the thing that helped? What changed it for you? What was the catalyst, if you like, for obviously we know now, don't we, that what's going to underpin everything you've spoken about there is a lack of self-esteem, a lack of self-love.
Absolutely.
At some level, you didn't think you were worth it, right? And but there was enough survival to be able to get you to that, to get you past. So what was the thing that helped you most?
Firstly, I was just desperate. And then it was other people. It was other people who had been through what I had been through and come out the other side of it. Because I did not trust myself, but I trusted the people around me. I was meeting these people who looked like they had their lives together and had home insurance and organized their diaries and remembered to buy milk and weren't going out and publicly humiliating themselves anymore. And they were happy. And I thought, oh my God, okay, maybe something is possible. And then one of the big things that they taught me is the power of community and the power of sharing.
Yeah.
And then also doing things for other people.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's what changed.
Kindness
That's,
is good for you.
It, yeah. Honestly, I really believe in like finding yourself by forgetting yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And just being taught how to do that, because I was in self-obsession my entire existence. And I'm just like, which is boring. And they've showed me the way. Mm. Yeah.
I'm guessing you did some work just, and we will get to the podcast in a
moment.
It's fascinating because I know there'll be a lot of people listening are like, oh God, that's me actually. You know, I'm guessing you did some stuff around early traumas when you were diving into everything, and something along the lines of adverse childhood experiences. Did that sort of thing come up?
So that it did come up. And I think I realized in rehab, well, I realized retrospectively looking back at rehab that when I was speaking about my upbringing and my childhood, et cetera, I did a lot of pointing fingers and a lot of blaming. Whereas now I'm in a place with it where I really just see that everyone just did the best they could.
Absolutely.
And they did pretty great considering specific circumstances or things they've been through. But something that was part of my story was, I always feel so cheesy when I say that, my story. Something that was part of my story was, like for a lot of women I know in recovery, when you're drinking, you're in really dangerous situations.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so there was sexual assault, things of that nature that happened. But like the first time it happened, I was 13 and it wasn't, and I wasn't drinking, right? And I think that sort of, and then I tried to speak to someone about it, but it was very taboo. And I think that instilled that thing in me, in my brain of, oh no, that's bad. These things are bad. I don't talk about those things. And secrecy became normal for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, yeah.
And shame. And when you hold a secret, it's so detrimental in so many ways. I'm a sober coach, but in addition to that, I'm also a family constellations practitioner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's too big a concept to go into now, but it's unbelievable for unpicking early traumas. Absolutely incredible in a really short space of time. It's one of the most powerful things I've ever done, apart from quitting alcohol, probably the most powerful thing I've ever done. But the reason I share that with you is because one of the things we talk about in Constellations, and I'm sure you covered this on when you were doing all the work that you've done, but one of the things we talk about a lot is this concept of the stuff that happens to us, certainly up to the age of 18, is where our beliefs are formed. Right. That's where we make those beliefs about ourselves. So it might just be something tiny that somebody said, a teacher or somebody well-meaning or a parent, whatever. And those early traumas are what shape us. And what's fascinating about the adverse childhood experiences, there's like a quiz, a little thing you can do. It's only 10 questions. And some of the questions are relatively innocuous, by the way. They're not all about abuse and trauma, which you think they might be. They're more innocuous. But the reality is, if you score something like 3 or more, I think it's 3, they say, don't quote me on that, but it's a small number to have to tick, then you're massively, like 90% more likely to have an addiction in later life.
Oh, yeah. Right?
But when you realize that, you realize that it's not your fault. Right?
No.
It's not your fault. And yet we spend so many years thinking, oh, it's me. I'm an addictive personality. I'm binge eating now. I'm this now. I'm that now. We take it on ourselves. And yet actually it's not your fault. It's linked to trauma. But then that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, it's my parents' fault. They fucked me up. It's not their fault either.
Exactly.
It's not your fault. But the great thing is it can be your responsibility now. That's the lovely thing, isn't it? When you do this work.
Exactly.
And when you see that responsibility as an opportunity.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I think it's so important to hold accountability and compassion in the same hand.
Yeah.
And also, stuff happened to me, right? But it doesn't define me.
Absolutely.
No. I find when I started to come to terms with all of this in recovery, I really had a moment of feeling like those things meant that I was going to be stuck forever.
Yeah.
Admitting.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And so I don't find it helpful for me to stare at the past, but rather just acknowledge it and go, I'm an alcoholic. I have an issue with drinking. It is what it is. So what can I do going forward?
Yeah. You and I have a different view on that, just so you know. I don't believe you're an alcoholic any more than I was or am. I believe I am absolutely free from the alcohol trap. That's just a difference of a nuance.
Yeah.
I would never say I'm an alcoholic. I would never stay stuck in something that was happening to me any more than I would say I'm a smokeaholic if I gave up smoking 20 years ago. That's just my take on it. But I absolutely appreciate your view is different.
Yeah, I think it's great that different people have different things that work for them. Yeah,
of course. You know? And I don't care how anyone comes to sobriety. The fact is, if you're sober, that's the most important piece, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. But so let's get back to where we were then. So then you get to sobriety, you do your rehab and all the pieces, and you've obviously done loads of work. And then you presumably have all these. You have obviously then you can then start to have the life you want. You can then, you're not stuck anymore. That's the amazing thing, isn't it? I don't think life becomes perfect, but you become much more resilient and able to cope with whatever is thrown at you. Apart from when you find yourself dating. What the hell happens now? Which is not often spoken about. So let's get back to that.
I think it's so funny because it doesn't matter who you are. Love and dating is where the smartest of people can lose all logic.
Yeah, totally.
And
I
love that. I think there's something so beautiful about that. I think the reason I'm obsessed with this topic is because like my relationship with myself is going to affect my relationship with other people
Absolutely.
And the world around me. And like dating is actually just a kind of symbol of where I am in me.
Yeah. And yeah, like, totally. When you got sober then, and you were, and presumably you were dating then, or you were about to be or whatever, were you, let's just do the kind of regular bit first before we even get to the sex. So was it important for you that the person you dated also didn't drink? Did you, because people find that piece really difficult. If I put my details out there, if I ask a friend to recommend, how important is it that they don't drink?
So I'm very open with the fact that I don't drink. And actually, I used to always make a joke before I go on a date if a guy did drink and say he'd actually have to have a personality and impress me. Light of it. But it isn't important to me that they don't drink, but I couldn't date somebody who was a regular drinker. I couldn't date someone that is going on nights out and coming home smelling of booze.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think actually it's so funny. The men that I've actually properly dated since I've gotten sober have only had a couple of drinks here and there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just because you know the moment that someone's drinking and you can see in their eyes that you've lost them?
Yeah. God, there's you know the whole sober equals bores anagram thing? The opposite is true.
Yes.
Drunk people are so boring. You're right. They glaze over. What the hell have I just spent ages sharing something really important with you?
Exactly. And I have had to spend 4 years just being completely in myself and completely in my body all of the time. And so now the idea of not having that feels really strange to me.
Yeah.
It feels odd to me. Yeah. So it wasn't something that I necessarily thought about when I first got sober, but I think I would have struggled with dating someone who did drink a lot. So, but I got a lot of questions, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
There'll be people who are dating the second or third time around, the older people who are getting back into the dating scene. And this whole thing about the whole sex thing is really tricky because, as I say, for many people, they will never have had sex sober, which is a sobering thought for sure, isn't it? And so then when you explain to us what the issues are, I remember for myself, I couldn't really understand, because if I was feeling better about myself, why did that feel so awkward? What do you think?
I think it's because it's the ultimate intimacy.
Yeah.
I think it's the ultimate intimacy, and like sober or not sober, I really think that we live in a world now where people are finding it more and more difficult to be themselves or to feel okay about themselves. We're surrounded by, can I swear?
Of course, absolutely.
Okay, thank God.
Do,
okay.
Yeah.
We're surrounded by so much bullshit, and like the messaging across social media or all of this stuff is just like awful. And like young girls, for instance, are the most depressed that they've been in, I don't even know how long. I think the same applies to boys also. And like dating apps have done all of these studies, and people fear rejection more than they have and feel like they're missing out on opportunities because they're like trying to play a game but don't know how to go about it. So I think it's like a combination of all of those things. And then it's a scary thing to be intimate with a person, like with your personality even, to really let someone in, especially when you've been through so much.
Yeah.
You had to put so much work into getting to a place where you feel good about yourself. It's kind of sacred. So then the idea of bringing someone else into that, not just emotionally, but physically, like I found that to be a lot at first. Now I love it. But like, so I think that's probably a big part of it. And also, it doesn't matter how like Billy Big Bollocks somebody behaves, right? Everyone's insecure.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess that's why we have this completely incorrect belief that alcohol will just loosen everything up and make us feel great. Actually, we realize it's a depressant. But I suppose for a short amount of time, yes, it does help us lose our inhibitions.
But you don't feel
anything.
Which is
why it seemed easier before.
Yeah. But you don't feel your body.
No, that's true.
I would never, ever, like, I never want to drink again, right? But I would never have drunk sex again.
No, absolutely.
Because it kind of feels like, what's the point? It's like eating candy without being able to taste it.
It doesn't
make sense to me now. And I guess like a lot of my confidence has come from being in situations that I would have previously handled with a drink.
Yes.
And realizing that I can get through that just completely okay. And I don't know, like my confidence is built off the back of that.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. I think just the biggest thing I would say to people is just approach everything with curiosity.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So what are your tips then? Come on, it's how to get wet when you're dry. Give them a few tips.
Okay. So my tips for dating or my tips in terms
of... both.
Okay. I'm going to right off the bat say I am by no means an expert. Like the whole thing with people coming on my show is that I am still figuring it out.
Yeah, of course.
And everyone is still figuring it out.
Don't worry, we won't hold you to it. Just share some ideas.
Please don't. If anyone who is dating me, has dated me, is listening, don't, then turn off now. No, so I think a few things that I really think. So the first one is I really think we need to make dating fun again. Because I hear so many people going, dating sucks now. And I understand
because
it.
Because of the pressure, do you think? The pressure to be a certain way?
I think so. But I also think a lot of dating is on apps now. And these things are designed to be addictive, which in itself sucks. The algorithms are designed in a way to keep us on there, to make us feel insecure at one point, and then all of a sudden we're going to get a match, etc.
Such
a short window of time to judge people. But I really think you have to go on at least 3 dates with a person before you can really get a sense of who they are.
Yeah, totally.
Actually, that's one. I would say something that I did, and it was suggested to me by a girlfriend, and this sounds really smutty, but she said, open your funnel.
Okay.
And by open your funnel, she meant go on dates with people that you wouldn't have necessarily said yes to. And then go on, unless they're nasty or god-awful or whatever, go on 3 dates with them before you make up your mind. Because I didn't realize that I used to judge myself so much, and I didn't realize that was coming. I would judge other people too. And I think I had, especially when I was drinking, I didn't like myself. So I had these expectations on the other person to almost fix me.
That can be a massive part of it, can't it? And also, again, it's been years since I've been on that scene. Thank God. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I'm not. But when I think back many years ago, actually, I definitely didn't like myself. And also, I realize now, unconsciously looking for something that was missing. In my case, I was looking for a sort of father figure. All right. And that we see that all the time, don't we? People are looking for something and expecting the other person to provide a huge part, which is crazy. No one can do that for you. You have to work on being whole first. You can't just be expecting someone to fill a gap, whether it's daddy or whatever.
Also, no pressure to them, right? I used to date like it was an Olympic sport when I was drinking, because I just thought, okay, I need to find someone who's going to look after me, make me feel good. But then I was putting my self-worth in their hands, right?
Yeah, so exactly.
It's just not sustainable. And so I think really just creating a life of my own, finding the things that I like doing and still doing them. If I'm dating someone and I like them, not then just all of a sudden keeping
dropping my everything.
Just not dropping everything. Mm. And then also not just, I used to do so much thinking, how do they feel about me? Do they like me? How am I coming across right now? And I changed it to, do I like them?
Yeah, yeah.
Because because when I was thinking the other way, it actually wasn't to do anything to do with them. And it was just me creating a fantasy and going into self-obsession about something to take myself out of me.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, okay, do I like this person? And then also, like, how do I want to be showing up? If I'm properly dating someone, I just touched on it, but when I didn't feel great about myself, I could be jealous. I play a game, etc. And now I just don't do that because it doesn't feel good. And I think other people feel it too. And then I just felt that I was like putting a wall between me and other people. And also, if something doesn't work out, it's meant to not work out.
Yeah.
It's never personal. I'm so grateful for rejection because it has always led to me discovering something better in myself or dating someone going forward who I'm a little more suited for, where I can show up in a different way.
Yeah.
And then,
I think part of what you're saying, I think, is around this being authentic piece. And actually, when you are authentic, when you do hold on to what you know is true for you, there's something really attractive about that. But it's true. It means that everyone won't be right. Some people won't like that. I'm reminded of when it comes to relationships, people find it really hard to set any boundaries, don't they? As you say, it's like, oh, you don't like doing that. Oh, I'll cancel my whole diary out then. I'll blow out all my friends.
No, fuck
that. Yeah. But at one time, I would have been exactly that person simply because I couldn't do boundaries. I thought that anyone who set boundaries in place was just a really mean person. But I think, again, with sobriety comes the ability to fully stand in your own sort of integrity and make a decision. And if something's a no, it's a no. And no is a complete sentence, right?
It really is. And I just do not have the energy to pretend to be something else now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you ever had this, but I would walk into a shit club and the music would be awful. Your feet would be sticking to the carpet. The whole place stunk. And you just knew, I'm going to have to drink a lot to make this night fun. I don't have that drink now, right? So I just do not have the energy to be putting into like pretending or trying to make something fun. And I used to really want to put in all of the work with a guy because I really wanted them to like me. So I would be cracking all of the jokes or filling the silences or being whatever they wanted me to be or what I thought they wanted. And now I just match their energy. I'm okay if I sit in silence and it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. And so tell us some of the tips for the sex bit then. What, any ideas you've heard? Well, we might help someone.
This is one that gets thrown around a lot, and I'm going to be so boring and repeat it, but communication.
No, it's not. No, there'll be people listening and they will have heard this for the first time.
Communication is a really big one, but I think you have to know what you like before you can really say to someone else what you like. And also, it's attractive to do that.
Yeah.
I think
totally.
Especially as women, I feel like we're raised in a lot of ways still to feel ashamed about our sexuality, to have a complicated relationship with it.
I think I could be out of date here. Trust me, I'm old, but I don't remember really properly getting in touch with, in inverted commas, properly understanding my own body parts till I was having a baby. So that bit's there.
This is the thing.
How funny is that? It's like you don't know your blood type till you're having a baby.
This is the thing, though, right?
You don't know all the bits.
Yeah, you don't know all the. I love it when people say bits. It's so true, but it doesn't make sense to me because it is as natural a human thing as sneezing. It's so natural. Everybody has sex. Everybody, not everybody, right? But everybody, it's normal. In the same way, people going through issues with mental health or addiction, this stuff is very widespread, but we don't speak about them.
Yeah.
And so I think that changing things up and having open conversations is really important.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I don't think it comes naturally to us, certainly not my generation. It does not come naturally to just have that open communication. I hope it does with younger people. But I think what the other thing that's definitely changed since I was your age is the increase in porn.
Oh my God, yes.
My personal opinion is that has got in the way big time. I would not want to be a teenage girl now. How the hell do you?
It's
really is. For the bits that I've seen are when I was young, that was so unusual. It was really unusual. If you met someone that watched porn, it's oh God, really? Now, how do you meet someone who doesn't?
This takes me back to the intimacy thing, right? Because I think there is porn out there that people specifically, like independent agencies and things, and there's some great women trying to produce porn that is ethical and where there isn't, and not harmful, right? But I have so many feelings about the consumption of porn nowadays. I'm not going to kink shame anyone, like a kink is a kink, etc. But there's all of these studies coming out with strangulation in porn, and that a partner is significantly more likely to murder you if he is engaging in that kind of behavior with you. On loads of these sites, there's women who are being trafficked, or things are happening to them that they didn't sign up for and didn't agree to, and they're leaving bruised and all of the underage stuff. And I think,
and particularly if alcohol is in the mix.
Of course, because of course, I know so many, I've spoken to so many women, not on my show, but who are in the industry and who relied heavily on drugs and alcohol to get through it.
Yeah.
And I do think that porn serves its purpose if it's like ethical, right? But I do think that it has changed the way that a lot of people have sex. And I think it can be particularly dangerous for women, right? Yeah. If a guy is used to watching things where like a woman is just being constantly strangled or hit or spat on. And it scares me. And it scares me because what I now love about sex is exactly what it wasn't for me in the past. In the past, it was detached. It wasn't loving. I wasn't connected to my body. And now sex for me is about intimacy, feeling that connection, feeling connected to my body, being in the moment, not performing and not thinking, how do I look right now? Do I need to be making a certain noise? Whatever, just really just being is beautiful. I think sex is a really beautiful thing. I just think we need to be more open about it. And then also to ensure that there are safe spaces for everybody. Yeah.
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 So communication is the big one then, yeah?
Definitely.
Any other tips that you give someone who is sober and about to step out onto the dating scene, knowing that this moment is going to be coming? And
I would say this is a really difficult one to actually do in practice, and I still work on it. But it doesn't matter what anybody thinks about you. So long as you are showing up and you are being kind and you are like living by your values, who gives a fuck what anybody thinks about you? What Billy I go on a date with thinks about me isn't any of my business. And just have fun with it. I don't know. I looked at it like a way to get to know myself too. And that's really exciting. And no one knows what they're doing when it comes to dating.
No. That's
nobody
true.
Nobody knows.
And so where are you at now then? Are you still dating? You don't have to answer that if you don't want to.
It's okay. Newly dating somebody. So okay. I've been dating them for 3 or so months. So newly dating someone. That was another thing, right? I had my first proper relationship in sobriety with a really wonderful person, and it wasn't working out. And I was able to leave that gracefully without being a dick.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm really glad you mentioned that. That's such an important one. I've had so many clients who, it makes it sound like all my clients have ended up breaking up. They haven't. But I have had an awful lot of clients who have quit alcohol. They've realized that it's time for their relationship to end for whatever reason. In some cases, it always was going to end. It was just being prolonged. But by being sober, exactly as you said, they've been able to do the whole thing with compassion. Even very difficult long-term relationships have ended with just a little rubber stamp, no need for expensive lawyers. They can actually be completely grown up and amicable. And that's, imagine how life would change if it was some, you know, the divorce lawyers would be out of a job.
But it is not easy. There was everything in me when that was going on that wanted to at times make comments or say my piece, but it just doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It just didn't matter. Yeah. And I don't know. It's constantly learning. And let me tell you, I fucked up in dating, if there's such a thing. I haven't always been, and I'm still not.
But as you said, what's the benchmark? Because nobody
knows
what they're
like
doing.
whatever.
I think what you said at the beginning is the truth, really, isn't it? It's just about coming back to who you are, really. That's all that matters. And when you're properly authentic in who you really are, that's the power, I think. And that's what sobriety can give you. It's really hard to actually properly be authentic and stay true to who you are when you're pouring toxic liquid in every day. It's hard, isn't it? Really hard. And you're a journalist as well. I mean, just realised, so you've been doing investigative stuff around addiction and eating disorders and stuff.
Yeah, so I've done a lot of looking into malpractice within the industry, specifically looking at where government funding is lacking.
Oh, okay, interesting.
And things like rehab brokering in the UK and in the US. And I also have, because we touched on the porn thing, did an investigation a year ago on an underground revenge porn ring in the UK.
Oh, wow.
On Telegram, that was created by guys as a sort of form of revenge to girls having a Facebook group where they discussed if these men were safe or not.
Wow. How fascinating. I mean, back on the what was it, the money in terms, the government in terms of UK addiction services, right? It's very interesting because I don't know whether, but I'm a sober coach and I also train people to be sober coaches. And we don't work with people at rock bottom or clinically dependent, but we work with people who are helping people who know it's time to quit and they're drinking more than they want to. But the really interesting piece is that, of course, because we don't work with people who are at rock bottom or clinically dependent, if we were to come across someone who needs that kind of help, we have to say, I'm really sorry, that's not my qualification. I'm not trained to work with you. Why don't you go here? And that's where it all falls apart.
Yeah.
Because across the UK, there's nothing joined up. The only thing we can say at the moment is go to your GP. But that's hit and miss, to say the least.
So and then hit and miss.
In some areas, you hear that there are some really good trusts that are putting together some stuff for alcohol services providers in the area. And then there are other areas where there's nothing, or it's nothing appropriate. I remember speaking to one woman who said to me, the only thing that I have been offered is a daily meeting, but I work and that's my only stability right now. So she would have to stop work, which is her stability, to go to a meeting. That's the only help available to her. How crazy is that?
Yeah, it's, and I think it's, there's also not a lot of training for medics when it comes to addiction.
No, absolutely. Certainly not early stages.
Yeah.
That's a huge... Are we going to get off on one now?
Oh my God, I could talk about that forever. It's a huge issue. And I think cross addiction, they also don't look out for that.
No,
like
absolutely.
If you're seeing someone who has an eating disorder, look into if
look
there's something
at
with
the
foods,
alcohol. Absolutely.
Or look into neurodiversity. Connect these pieces early on. Get people therapy early on. Like the difference that something like that can make is immense.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Why can't we do some of this stuff before the horse has bolted? That's a very old-fashioned expression. But why don't we do it first? It's utterly crazy that people who've heard this podcast will know, they've heard me say it 1,000 times. But when I was drinking, I was not at rock bottom, but I was drinking every bloody day. And when I eventually was brave enough to mention it to a GP, I'd gone for something else. I'd gone for a vitamin D test. But on the way out, I said, oh, by the way, I'm a little bit worried about my drinking. It took a lot for me to say that. It really did. I felt very safe with her, and it wouldn't happen now. They don't give you an extra minute at the door, but back then they did. And I just said, actually, I'm worried about my drinking. And she just literally looked at me and said, you look fine. How much are you drinking? Obviously,
this is
the
thing.
They know you lie. So I lied and I said 2-3 glasses a night, sometimes a bit more. And she just went, absolutely normal. Just have the odd alcohol-free day. Yeah. Like I hadn't thought of that. Like I hadn't thought of, oh, I won't drink tonight. There you go. And I went out of that surgery. We're like, oh, thank God. I'm completely normal. She says there's nothing to worry about. That kept me stuck for another 5 years.
It's now, so true.
Need her to tell me. Yeah, I didn't need her to say, oh, you're right. And I must stop too. She ain't going to stop. She just needed to tell me, you know what? Well done you. For knowing it's not serving you. Now, let me point you in the direction of the Sober Club, or if I'd had it then, or some support, because there are loads of people choose not to drink. And I understand that they're loving it. That's all she needed to do, right? Because it was not appropriate for me to start going to any kind of, I didn't need alcohol services. I just needed someone to understand, let's help this person. Let's give this person some encouragement before she heads further down the booze elevator. Right.
Yeah.
I
was continually going saying I binge ate and I binge drank again. And the idea that I had a problem wasn't mentioned to me because I think that there's still this stereotype of what an alcoholic looks like.
Yeah,
or
totally.
What someone with a drinking
and they
problem
can't work
like.
With you until you are literally in the gutter.
And that's also a funding issue, unfortunately, right? I don't know the exact figure anymore, but it's something like only 2% of people will get referred by the NHS for residential care.
That's right.
And there are other things out there that are free and 12-step fellowships, all of this stuff, et cetera. But even that, it's not really, people aren't signposted to these things enough.
No.
And yeah, I have a lot of feelings about it. The amount of deaths that are actually alcohol related, but just aren't recorded as alcohol is insane.
Oh, it'd be huge. It'd be huge, right? And yeah, exactly. With all the various illnesses, in so many illnesses, that the illness will have been exacerbated by alcohol. It's just that you don't get that on the death certificate.
Exactly. And so it just doesn't make sense why we're not investing more in early stage help and prevention and therapy, right?
Yeah. Just back on, I just want to ask you something back on in terms for you, when you got sober, how did that impact on the binge eating?
So basically, it was my eating disorder that really brought me to my knees. That's why I wanted to kill myself. I didn't realize that the booze was also a part of why.
Yeah.
But I just knew that if I were to drink again, I would binge eat again. And then I would have my bulimia again, and that would be it. I was walking 40,000 steps a day. Half my hair had fallen out of my head. I was eating out of a bin, and I was really... People don't talk about how dark an eating disorder really gets. It's just, oh, she doesn't eat.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
It's like a skinny white woman thing when actually it affects minority communities significantly more and they're less likely to get help and all of this stuff. But I had help from this one woman in particular with my eating disorder who'd recovered from it herself. And just seeing that was possible was such a game changer. And she just told me everything that I knew about food and about my body and about exercise was bullshit. And it was just really a fake it till I make it situation. And just introducing little things like having a fear food of mine every single day for a week until it neutralizes, or going easy on myself, going slowly, realizing that it's not going to be linear. And I cannot believe that I have the relationship I do now with my body or with food. I don't think about it at all now. Yeah, and that's great. Such a blessing, but really affected my love life. I used to not want to go to restaurants with guys, or I would go on a date. And if I did eat something, I would panic and I'd go home and I would hit the fuck it button and I would binge eat.
Yeah.
And then I wouldn't want to see them again.
Yeah.
And in early recovery too, I'd get very stressed. And now it just isn't something I think about. And that for me is just, I just didn't even think I was going to be alive. Yeah. Right. So it's
I think I know it's super obvious to say this, but the reality is when you can come back to recognizing that you can actually take care of yourself and you actually like yourself, or dare I say it, the self-love word. Someone who loves themselves doesn't want to self-harm. That's the reality, isn't it?
It, you know what? It is. But also, I really believe in the whole thing of other people had to love me before I could love myself.
Yeah.
And not in the sense of like poor Paul from a dating app, right? But my community.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are times where the thoughts in my head can crop back and can be a little harsher to myself than normal. But now it's recognizing that and knowing it's bullshit. It's just a thought. It's not a reality. It's not the reality.
Exactly. You are not your thoughts. Yeah.
You just aren't your thoughts. Yeah.
Amazing. What an amazing transformation. You should be so proud of yourself. And I'm jealous of you, because I wish I'd done it when I was your age. that's my only regret. Why the hell didn't I do this sooner? Oh, God.
You are still a spring chicken, all right? <You're>...
But well done you. It's great. And just sharing this, I just know, though, it's really powerful, because you're absolutely right. A lot of people keep the alcohol piece silent, the eating disorder piece even more. That's the secretive bit, that so often happens. And even just bringing the stuff about sex out into the open and relationships. Again, these are all things that people just crack on with and they think they're the only ones. That's the thing, isn't it?
Everyone
thinks they're the only one going through this.
For men too, right? Like men really struggle with eating disorders.
Yeah.
They
really
do. And with depression, their suicide rates are higher, everything.
That's true.
Everybody is going through something or touched by someone who is.
Yeah.
And so we just need to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just need to absolutely. Just by sharing it and the fact that you've got through it and you can actually love yourself now. It's amazing. So tell us about the podcast. Tell us where we can find it and anything else you want to share.
Sure. So the show is How to Get Wet When You're Dry. It's all about love and lust without the liquor. And you can find us all over the podcast platforms and then on social media across everything. We are at Wet Wind Dry.
Nice.
And another one just quick thing to say on that too is a very dear friend of mine who is sober and also a sex and relationships therapist, Miss Sally O'Sullivan. She comes on sometimes and we answer listener questions about dating, relationships, sober living, whatever. So if you have them, send them to us on Instagram, because we fucking love them.
Great. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being my guest. I really appreciate it. I wish you all the best. And I'd love to meet up if you're in London.
I would love to.
Let's do
and
something.
Thank you for
we'll
having
do something.
Me.
We'll come to one of my events or something.
I would
love to. We'll do something together. It'd be great fun.
That would be
brilliant.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Thanks
really
so
appreciate
much.
It.
Bye. Have a great rest of the day. Bye.
Thank
bye.
You.
You've been listening to the Natural Health and Sobriety Show on UK Health Radio.